Today's show is brought to you, as ever, by our friends over at RacingPicks.com. Terrific horse racing information and analysis over at RacingPicks. Best news is, it's free. Top names like In the Money's own Matt Bernier giving out their thoughts for various race days, videos as well. All you got to do is click on Expert Picks, give your email, and you have access to a full array of terrific handicapping content and analysis. And I'll tell you what, it helps us out too when you sign up. You support your our sponsors and you're supporting us. RacingPicks.com. Check it out today. Hello and welcome to the RacingPicks.com Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you with an exciting show covering racing in three jurisdictions, and we have three great guests to help us do it. We're going to start off with In the Money's own Spencer Lugenbuehl. Then we're going to have a nice visit from John Pinder, and we'll wrap things up with another In the Money regular, Drew Coatney. It's all the home team today, all the In the Money folks on this RacingPicks.com Players Podcast, and we'll get to it right after this. Want to take a minute to thank our latest partners over at Millridge Farm. Very excited to have them on board. For those that don't know, Millridge Farm is a thoroughbred nursery in Lexington, Kentucky that has raised or sold 35 grade one winners since 2000. These are folks who are passionate about the industry and also about connecting people with horses and also about horse players' role in the thoroughbred racing business. If you want to learn more about raising horses, breeding horses, crafting matings, buying or selling, reach out to Millridge Farm in person, on Facebook, or through their website, millridge.com. First up on the show, I'm very happy to have joining me from the In the Money Media family. You know him from Twitter as @handy_capper, and you know him as the host of Redboard Rewind, Spencer Lugenbuehl. How are you, my man?
I'm good, man. Happy to be here. Happy to finally get back to my old stomping ground of Santa Anita.
So tell that story. So this is a track that you typically follow very closely.
So before my birthday 5 years ago, Scott Shapiro was looking for a Southern California handicapper. I said, I've never done this before, but I'm willing to give it a shot. And I did Santa Anita for 2 or 3 years for his website before it shut down. So
Gotcha. Definitely.
I had really never done West Coast handicapping, but I'm very familiar and still pretty familiar with all the jockeys and stuff going on out there for sure.
It's a circuit that can be up and down, but it looks to be up at the moment. I mean, this is a great looking card. Obviously, they've had their trials and tribulations, but we're happy to support them. We love this new Golden Hour pick four. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later on. But I think we should start off running through the stakes races. It starts out with one that isn't all that exciting, but it will presumably have major Breeders' Cup implications as we're talking about the Grade Two Chandelier for two-year-old fillies going a mile and a 16th on the dirt. I have nothing to say other than the incredibly obvious. Princess Noor just looks better than these. Will stretch out just fine, can pass horses, probably be a very short price, will certainly be a minuscule price here and go on to be a short-ish price in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, depending on exactly what happens here. Do you have any creativity, or is this just a free square in the early pick five move on?
Not so much creativity, but why three backwards in this race? If this horse is going to be so unbeatable, why we have the other ones in there? One other fact is that the three and the four might be a little bit faster early than this one. And knowing that she can pass horses, I just feel that maybe not a straight single, but if you're not going to single, you kind of have to not play her then in that case. I think the three and the four could be possible upsetters in this race for sure.
We've seen the longer Baffert win. As for the Y situation, I mean, graded stakes, black type at two, it's just so valuable. I wouldn't call that any kind of negative whatsoever, because there's so much to be gained even just by running second and third in this spot. But hey, I get the idea of not wanting a horse that 2 to 5 on the morning line. For the English work that I do, I'd tell him if you can get 2 to 5, bet it. I don't know. Have you looked at any of the prices in the UK yet for these Santa Anita races? I couldn't find any when I was looking this morning.
I have not yet. I was going to look later tonight. I just I think that, especially now with me doing some stuff overseas, it's amazing just the difference in odds you can sometimes get and really find the horse that you know is going to be 5-2 here and is 8-1 sitting there like a cherry to be picked off the top of a tree pretty much.
Yeah, well, hopefully someday we're going to have fixed odds opportunities here in the States. Let's move on, Spencer, to race number 7. This is the next graded stakes race on the card. More win and you're in action in terms of this Rodeo Drive. It kicks off this late pick 5, races 7-11. And I'll let you go first with this one. What did you come up with?
So obviously the number 6, Lady Prance, a lot's going to be tough in here. I just think that the last couple of races, slow improve. This horse, you know, is going to pretty much run that low 90 to high 80 buyer. The number 4, Mucho Unusual, I thought was one that was interesting. 5 straight races of a 90 buyer, just something that I think might just be consistent as you can get there out on the West Coast. Has never missed the board on this turf course. And just one at a price that I think can be very dangerous. The other one as well, I thought the 2, Maxim Rate. It looks like this one might just be an allowance type, but I think that getting Saez up for Simon Callahan, who we know is so good with these types of horses, and the fact they're going long, he might be able to, you know, give a little bit more speed with this horse, with the type of rides we know he likes to give from me watching so much East Coast action as well.
Sure, it is interesting to take a look at the horses that Saez ends up on elsewhere on this card, and I do think you can probably infer that some of them will be a little bit more forward. But it's interesting, you mentioned 3, you didn't mention the one I like. I'm with Bodhicitta in here, Spencer, who I think is going to fit pretty well. Should get the jump, I believe, on Lady Prancelot. And I just really like the fact that this one showed a new dimension last time, showing that tactical foot and shapes like one who will enjoy the added ground. And then when you go back and you look at the runs as a 2-year-old on soft ground going a mile in Ireland, the distance isn't going to be any problem for Bodhicitta. Might eventually end up being the best of speed, and I think he'll be able to go on with it. Did you see this as a particularly open race, or did you not like Bodhicitta actively?
I just think that with Flavian Pratt also being on, we know Pratt kind of ends up being like the Ortiz brothers out east, just hurts the price usually, and I thought this one might just be too short for me in a race that I thought was fairly wide open.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Let's move on to race number 8. Grade 1 action continues with the American Pharoah, 1/16 on the dirt for 2-year-old colts. And I thought it's time for Spielberg to get the maiden breaker finally in this spot. This is a horse who I feel like is going to be really well served by the stretch out just visually, because it feels to me like he just hasn't been that quick. He doesn't have the acceleration that a lot of Bafferts have. And I feel like that type of grinding style typically better suited to going longer. No Dr. Scheivel here to upset the party for Spielberg. I think the stage is set, if you will, for him to make this race a winning one. What did you think?
I wrote right underneath the horse, look at the Philly race to see exactly how Bob finishes in that race. I know obviously Phillies and Colts are different. I think Saya is also getting the mount shows that he's coming there for some super live mounts. I know he's also on Maximum Security. Maybe that's kind of them showing their hand that this horse is ready to go. I just, the 73 and then the 70, obviously they're going from a maiden to a grade 1. I always like to see improvement second time out. There is no improvement here. So if you're ever going to look at the negative, this horse is also a maiden in a graded stake, 2 seconds. Maybe this is a second itis horse. I thought the number 8, Wasperant, was a little bit interesting. It's the only horse that's won at the route distance so far. And Blinkers On, which I now look at as more of a negative, I feel that this horse might get the trip where Rispoli can kind of be aggressive and get him out early on the lead and possibly steal it.
You would also think that in the patient hands of John Sheriffs, you're going to get improvement from Wasperant. And I do like the fact that the 2-turn race is on display. The only counterpoint I'll make about Spielberg is I think you can argue, looking at the paces in the first 2 races, that he really did improve. In fact, that's the way that the Timeform US figures have it, just with the slower pace coded blue in the August 8th race and then the faster number from September 7th. Look, I'm not saying the horse is necessarily a world beater, but I do think the one that beat him is a real horse, and I expect that improvement. We'll see. It's going to be the market's going to be at war with itself in terms of tendencies here. Maiden in a grade one should give you juice in the odds, but Baffert Saez will doubtless knock the odds in a bit. I like your Wasprin as an alternative, honestly, and I'm going to take another look at that one and probably be messing around with some exactas in there as well. Let's talk about race number nine. It's the grade two John Henry, a mile and a quarter on the turf. The return to the races of United in here. How did you see it, Spencer?
This is one where I think if you're going to play United, you have to single. I am not going to single United. I just, when I look at the last few races, combine them, they've all been by less than a length. And in turf racing, obviously the racing gets very bunched up at the end. Do I really want a horse that's probably going to be even money, 4-5, when there's horses like Originaire in this race? You know, even Salvatore Mundi coming up from the optional races is a little bit interesting. Oscar Dominguez. I just feel like a horse like Originaire, or even Proud Pedro from the rail. If I'm going to just take United, I can't add horses on if we're playing the multi-races, because it's just going to kill the equity in my bet. It's either United for me, or I'm going to look for three or four others to try and beat him.
I feel like I respect that approach. I will have United on tickets for sure. I agree with everything you said, and I'm not making him my top pick. You mentioned the one I'm interested in. Salvatore Mundi, to me, is just an interesting stranger. This horse, a very progressive type, really looks to have turned the corner since facing the ultimate equipment change of getting gelded before the third start back. It's hard for me to take the ones that have continually knocked heads with United. I take your point. When they've finished within a length and they're going to be so much more of the price, I can see it. I do think United has the class that he'll probably handle the ones he's used to facing. But I like this idea of Salvatore Mundi with a potentially forward way of going to get the jump and the win against United in this spot. And if we have UK listeners paying attention, this is a very interesting UK horse, because as long as the eight runners go, you'll get a quarter of the odds of your win price for first, second, or third. So you're talking about basically getting 3-2, 6-4 over there to show on Salvatore Mundi, assuming the field holds together. That would be my number one bet in the race if it was available to you. Obviously, U.S. punters, we got to do something else. And this isn't one that I only think can run underneath. I do think this horse can win.
This is also the horse that me and Tyler Hoffman went over in my episode of Red Bull Rewind with him. And the reason he came up with him in the last race was based off of a bad trip in the previous race two back.
All right. Lots of good notes on that one. Let's move on to the main event, really, of the day. We've got two horses who would be in the top four in the market for the Breeders' Cup Classic for the Grade One Awesome Again, going a mile and an eighth on the dirt. I will also underline that this is the first leg of the $1 Golden Hour Pick Four. Going to be hearing a lot about the Golden Hour Pick Four on our programs, because this is a bet designed by horse players for horse players. Very much in favor of it. Very intrigued by the Golden Hour Double as well, that debuted earlier in the year. But I'm really interested in this pick four as well, and we'll have some of the people who helped conceive the bet on at points to chat about as well. So we're going to give you some bonus coverage of Golden Gate too. But we're going to finish the Santa Anita card, and then we'll do the two Golden Gate races, and I'll try to let folks know where they are in the sequence. But definitely encourage everybody to check out the Golden Hour Double and pick four low takeout. I like what they're doing with the betting minimums on these bets. And again, the kind of thing we want to support, some innovation from our friends out there at the Stronach Group and Santa Anita and Golden Gate. With that said, let's talk about this Awesome Again. It surely looks on paper like a match between Maximum Security and Improbable. Do you see it any differently?
No, I'm taking these two and I'm just moving on.
You're not going to grade them. You're not going to give preference to one over the other.
Just because, to me, if you're going to single, that's where the equity is going to be in your part of the ticket, because I feel like they're pretty much going to be 50-50, maybe more Max because of him, you know, having the DQ last year, and Improbable just having the Whitney win on a slow pace. Maybe it pretty much will look like Max should be 1A and this is the one. I think that it's going to be more 50-50. I bet if Improbable wins that more pick four tickets will be kicked out because Max losing, but to me, they're pretty much equal.
Yeah, Maximum Security will surely be a shorter price. So I'd say, in a way, if you like them equally, I'd still try to do a little bit more with Max, just so you're not getting yourself a little bit upside down. I think I'm comfortable, and this is a dangerous thing, because the last time, maybe the only time, I backed Maximum Security, and this is really an indictment of me as a horse player. The only time I can remember betting him was in that Monmouth loss in a fixed odds opportunity, because I happened to be in England at the time.
Yeah.
That's so I'm not in tune with this horse, but he looks very, very, very strong to me here. Despite the fact that I recognized two back was not terribly visually impressive, and last time I felt like was a gift when allowed to dictate terms with the strange rating of midcourt that maybe we'll see again. Maybe that's the way they wanted midcourt ran, given that Victor's still on the horse. There is other speed in here for sure, but it's not the same level of Max. I like being drawn outside at Santa Anita. There's not a lot in it at the prices, but I'm just going to go ahead and on TV in the UK, 3 to 5 or better, I'm going to say bet Maximum Security, and he's my top pick in here. I don't object to anybody wanting to back up with Improbable. Anything to add in the Grade One Awesome again?
I just, and this is going to say, obviously, with midcourt finishing second by a nose, two back, I just feel like if you bet midcourt, you're kind of burning money at this point.
I don't know. The only thing I'll say is I'd be curious to see if they do try the tactics that actually work two back, if you could get a better result. But again, it says to me that maybe that was, there are plenty of conspiracy theories and whatnot, but it says to me that that's what the connections wanted. They were happy with the ride. Same rider right back in the irons. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about race number 11. So this one will be leg three of the, or leg C, I like to use the letters, leg C of the Golden Hour Pick Four, and leg A of the $5 Golden Hour Double. We'll get to those Golden Gate races when we're done with these Santa races. But I wanted to get your take here. Why don't you lead us off in the nightcap at Santa Anita?
I am going to take a hard pass on the outside first-time starter by Peter Miller. Saez coming on is definitely a plus to me, but just I think there's other ways you can go in this race. Obviously, the number two in Jest, Doug O'Neill, Mario Gutierrez, just seems to be the one slowly improving. The last two turf races have been the two better races. This is kind of the wise guy horse that I feel like is just going to be the favorite, just to end up being the favorite. I'm going to take a little bit of a shot with the number six Investment Account. I like the fact that the blinkers come back on, since the best race was with the blinkers on. And it's also second time turf, which is another improvement angle. And this horse is a great 12-1.
Yeah, it's a square price. And the gelding angles on both of these, with Ingest being a first time gelding and Investment Account going out for the second time as a gelding. So I can definitely see Investment Account if I squint. I would make Ingest my top pick and most likely winner. I'm going to throw in the 8 Warren's Candyman just for a penny. Requires some imagination, but this horse took just a scintilla of money, given that it was a mile first out on the grass for Craig Lewis. Not a horse that you would have expected necessarily to take money first time. Did at least catch the littlest bit of cash. Did not do much in the way of running, but Lewis, like so many trainers, you expect them to improve second out. I just feel like there is a chance there could be a little bit more under the hood here. I don't want to just single Ingest. I like the idea of potentially using Ingest as my A in these various pick bets, and then sneaking in Warren's Candyman and your Investment Account under as B's, and or using underneath to see if we can get a little bit of magic to happen in these races at Santa Anita. Should we move on to Golden Gate? You have any other thoughts on the Santa card before we rock and roll?
I will say one last thing about Warren's Candyman. I forget what podcast I was listening to, but apparently Craig Lewis, second time out, I think like 7 or 8 winners in the past, whatever the time frame was, but all the sires, clubhouse ride.
Oh, that's you know, that's funny. I do remember when doing some of the work I was doing for AtTheRaces.com about breeding in California, and Clubhouse Ride came out looking wonderful when looking at any and all of the advanced metrics. So that doesn't shock me. All right, let's move on to Golden Gate. Race number 9 is the first one we're talking about. This is going to be the second leg, in other words, leg B of the Golden Hour Pick Four. We've got 3 and up allowance going 5.5 on the synthetic. I was going to try to get out with the two Jonathan Wong runners in here. I saw a great trip for number 2, El Chavo del Ocho, transferred the good current form to synthetic. And then the stable mate also made perfect sense to me. No longer silent. This one appears to have made a very big step up as a 3-year-old. Maybe could move forward again in the second start off that long layoff. I'd try to get out 2-4, but I'm open to suggestions here at Golden Gate. A track that I look at every week, but not one that I would necessarily call myself a specialist in.
I am 2-4 as well. I would say probably 70-30 with the 2 getting more of the money for sure. I just like a horse that just likes to break conditions. Obviously, 2 back breaks the N1X, comes right back, breaks the N2X. I mean, just what else can you ask for?
I'm with you. Let's we look at it the same. I'm going to take that as a good sign as we move on to race number 10 at Golden Gate. This is the one that will close out both the Golden Hour Pick 4, Leg D, and also the back half of the Golden Hour Double. We've got $6,500 claimers, 3 and up going a mile on the turf. These are fillies and mares. Spencer, I ask you the only question that matters. How are we going to get paid?
Well, we're going to pay with some bombs, I think. I like the 5, totally normal, 10-1 on the morning line. I just like the fact that since the trainer change, Wayne Baker just seems to have this horse going in the right direction, 54 into a 63, both of them being on the turf. And then last time was with the Bug Boy, now gets the more journeyman rider. I feel like it's a positive move, just a horse that I think has a very decent shot. And then the number 10 early in the morn, it's another race, 63 buyer last time out. And that was also first time turf. It's just that first time, the second time turf angle just could be one where a horse can bump up 10, 15 points and easily puts them better than the rest.
And that race was probably significantly better than this one, a little bit higher of a level. The thing that I was struggling with early in the morn, and the price is enough to get me over it, and the pace figures are enough to get me over it, but just how many of the others in here? Well, basically, what do we have who beat this one? We have Totally Normal, who you're also using. Yeah. So that's totally logical. And then Street Sonata has this one. Well, they've traded decisions actually, but Street Sonata still has this one on the form book. So I might be inclined to throw in that other long shot if I were going in that direction. At the end of the day, I came back to the two that I thought were going to get the best trips. It did seem like with early in the morning here and some other speed, the pace should be okay. Big Maria, I thought looked very logical. Live It Well. I mean, these were just figure horses I thought were going to get pace to run at. I think it's a race where I want to spread my face off, though, and I love the idea of including your prices as backups. For me, I'd probably be looking to use the 3 and the 8 as A's, and then your numbers, which were the 5, the 10 as backups. And for me, I'd have to include Street Sonata as well, just on the basic form handicapping as far as that goes. Anything else, Spencer, for you on this Golden Gate late double, part of the Golden Hour Pick 4, and of course the Golden Hour Double?
I'm just looking forward to having these great stuff happening out with Santanita. It's nice to see the players finally get the right, you know, type of wagers. The dollar minimum is fantastic. Also the low takeout. Nice to see that we're not, you know, having to deal with the 23%ers anymore.
Yeah, they do a good job. They're definitely the likes of Tom Quigley and Nate Newby, and it seems like Aiden Butler comes from a gambling background and understand what it's like on the punter side of the equation as well. And then they've got that great crew out there in the Eddie Logan suite, the Leo Vukmanoviches of the world, and Florine Sima. These are big bettors who have the ear of important people, and they come up with great ideas like these Golden Hour bets. So I'm glad you chose to underline that. Hey, what about Stable Duel? I know you've been doing a couple of beat the host events out there. We heard their commercial a little bit, or we haven't heard it yet. We're going to hear their commercial a little bit later in the show. But what you're going to be participating on there? Any stories from the battlefield from you and Stable Duel? I know you're a big fan.
Just the last time at Woodbine, probably bit off a little bit more than I can chew, finishing 80th of 81st. Just it was a tough day.
Oh no, I didn't notice that.
Definitely a tough day, but I was happy to have Jude Feld on, who was one of the guys who ended up beating me that day. We had a great Red Board Rewind show, came out earlier in this week, and just they do a great job. I'm hoping that I saw you mention me and Camardo for coming on for the Preakness show. Hopefully I will be off from work, or at least, you know, around at that time, and we'll be able to rock and roll.
I like it. You got any of my books on that shelf behind you?
Oh, I got all the books.
Woohoo!
The book you can think of on the shelf.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. You mentioned Redboard Rewind. You've been doing a tremendous job. If folks haven't checked it out in a while, it's time to do so. I just think it was always good, but I feel like you've just improved so much as a host and as a broadcaster. And you've had some great guests, and I know you have some exciting ones coming up. Another fellow who might have a book on that shelf behind you. Tell the listeners about that coming up next week for Preakness.
So for next week's show, I'm going to have Barry Meadow on, who is a famous author. Just had a book come out last year, and always the best bankroll book I can ever tell people to go out and buy. So we'll be talking about that a bunch. And then hopefully for Preakness Week, we're going to have Naomi Tucker on, talk Preakness. And also I'm going to try and get Big Ace Anthony Stabile to come on. We'll talk some Belmont as well. We're going to do a double show again.
I'm so glad to hear that, because we are overdue to have the Big A back on the network. We've had so much fun with him back in the Naira Betts shows that we used to do. And Naira Betts, of course, one of the sponsors now over at Redboard Rewind. And you mentioned Barry Meadow. I'll make the plug complete. Money Secrets at the Racetrack is the bankroll book. And then the new book, which is a computer study testing all these old maxims about thoroughbred racing. It's a fantastic book. The Skeptical Handicapper, you can get them both. I think it's trpublishing.com. Tell them we sent you and you get a discount. So there you go, Spencer. Have an enjoyable weekend. And I look forward to hanging out with you again very soon.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon, Pete.
Stable Duel is an incredibly fun and easy way to play the horses to supplement your other horse playing, like a blend between fixed odds betting, traditional horse playing, fantasy gaming, and horse racing contests. These games are a lot of fun and something that everybody should be checking out. To play, you just have to download the Stable Duel app. You can get more information over at StableDuel.com. Games for various price points, free games coming soon, and a big Preakness game coming. Lots more information about Stable Duel coming down the line too, right here on the In the Money Media Network. Check it out. Download the Stable Duel app today.
It was the eighth race from Golden Gate on Sunday. Did you see it?
My shift would have been over by then. I did not see that.
Okay. So me and the family go out and going to restaurants is just a pain now because there's such a long waiting time or whatever. So we go out, we go to Target. My wife looks at me. She's like, just go to the track. She's like, you look like you need just a few hours. So I go, I'm unprepared. I grab my cigar box and my laptop and I'm gone. And I'm sitting in my spot and I've gone through maybe about 40 minutes. And I roughly put together this pick four. I'm alive in the second leg. No, the third leg. I'm alive in first leg, so I'm doing well, and the race goes off, and I've got three or four horses that I'm alive to, but I'm keyed to one. The horse breaks, Pete, and he's like he shoots like out like a cannon, and I'm like, you know, you get that euphoria feeling of like this horse can't lose. He's out in the front, and I'm like, man, this is a mile and a half. He's tearing it up. Like, they're not going to be able to catch him. I'm let me turn the page and look for a double or something, because this is over with. So there's one horse, the two horse pulls up. He's without a rider. He throws a rider and he's running alongside. I'm like, please just don't screw this up. And the four horse is going, they go around the turn for the first time and he pulls up. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, he was so far out in front. It was ridiculous. So I turn the page and I play the pick three and move on. Monday, I'm going through my phone and I see a Pollock report and it's race eight at Golden Gate. And I'm like, why are they showing this? Like, that was a weird race. But so while I'm at the track, I don't have any sound. I'm just looking at, because they've got so many different things going and it's Sunday, not a big broadcast. So anyway, the horse didn't pull up, Pete. The jockey thought that it was a 6-furlong race. And it was a mile and a half.
I realized the story as you were telling it, what was going on. Like,
oh my goodness. So,
I'm not gonna make you retell that. I'm hoping since we're recording, we can just fold it in. We're gonna do something non-traditional here if producer Craig will allow. And we're gonna start cold, and now I'm gonna bring you in officially. The voice you've been hearing and the sob story that I think a lot of horse players can relate to, at least if they were betting that runner at Golden Gate on Sunday. You know him from the In the Money Players Podcast blog. You should know him on Twitter. We're going to get you some more followers on there because the content you've been pumping out for us is so good. At horseplayer31. John Pinder, how are you, my friend?
Doing very well, Pete. How are you?
Life is good. What I wanted to ask you, so we met with your deep run at the NHC back in the Scott Coles, Matt Vagvolgi year. You were the third young analytical horse player that I met. I don't know what it was about that particular sequence of races that all these young analytical horse players did so well. But have you been playing in contests much? Have you been active?
I haven't been due to the COVID just kind of put a damper on everything. And this year I made up in my mind I was going to try and do some live money events, but that just kind of got, you know, washed away. So it's that time, it's an exciting time right now. You know, we've got Breeders' Cup right around the corner. And then the next thing I'm thinking like, oh, NHC, I got to get qualified, or at least should. So I'm playing in, I think the last free contest for the NTRA is this Saturday. So I'm going to throw some numbers at that, and then I'm going to really get serious hereafter. Unfortunately, I was going to try and do the BCBC, but again, I think they're going to let a few people on site, it sounds like, for the contest, and it won't be the same. So I'm not going to opt for that, but NHC is definitely on the radar.
We should explain that part of the complication here is, as a Texas resident yourself, not as easy. The live bank, you don't have the online option to play the BCBC there. You'd have to go get some sort of dispensation to be one of the lucky few who could go to Keeneland. So that's why it sounds more complicated. But anyway, we hope you get back there. We hope we're all there. We got to see what's going on. We'll learn a lot more in the next few months. We're expecting an announcement at some stage from our friends at the NTRA. But we're not here to talk about that, John. We are here to talk about Belmont on Saturday. We've got some interesting races in this late pick five. It kicks off with race number 6, and it's a maiden claimer, $40,000, a mile and a 16th on the inner turf. Where did you go in here?
Pete, in here, I've got a little spready. I'm going to give away the plot of the story before we really begin. I really like a couple of horses in the middle of the sequence. And I'm going to lean heavily on them. So in these first couple of legs, I'm going to go out and look for some prices. I don't think I need to include, you know, 5 or 6 horses. But that being said, a couple of the horses that I really like in the sequence, we'll start kind of at the back and work our way back. So Kitten's Romance, anytime Kitten's Joy is on turf, you always want to take a look for sure. But I like this when it was claimed, and they're keeping it at the same level. Adding blinkers is something that one of the angles that I like. So I'm looking for her to be there. These are the girls. Number 9, Hot Button, looked really good in the beginning, but again, because of my leverage and how I'm going to lean on some horses in the middle of the sequence that are going to be shorter prices, I'm going to try and miss this one. Okay. You know, haven't seen a whole lot from her, so hopefully we can miss it there. If you're playing the sequences and looking at, I definitely wouldn't leave the horse out, but just for my particular sequence here, I'm gonna try and miss the number 9 Hot Button. Also including We5, the 3 horse. There's something about this horse. I kept looking. I think the form's just a little dirty. She was sold for a good price as a yearling, was competitive in the first part of the last race with an aggressive rider. And I'm hoping now with Joelle, it's kind of the opposite of that she had last time. And that was Luis Saez. So we're kind of contrasting.
I love that angle, by the way. I love that type of jockey handicapping. That's very sharp. Just looking for those changes that could lead to improvements in a race where you're wanting to spread.
Hopefully it won't be like my friend Mr. Gomez at Golden Gate.
Oh my goodness. Hey, who else? It sounded like you had one or two others you were going to include in your spread.
Yes, one more. And I think this is the horse to beat if not number 9. Valletta, the number 2 horse. All signs point to that she's gonna fire here. Great jockey. The train is really good with everything that's here. That's first time after the claim, turf stats, all of those things look to be the good. So really leaning on the 2 and the 10 as A's, and then we 5 as a B.
I was surprised looking at Valletta how well she came out on pace figures against this group despite the closing trips, and it felt like the last was better than it looked based on how wide she was all the way around there. I definitely wanted her among my numbers. I wasn't as brave as you. I was going to leave Hot Button in the mix. And then the only other one that I had ID'd to talk about here, and I hadn't put these in any order yet, but number 5, Candy Flower. I thought it was a little bit interesting getting the drop I was guessing she needs, not being far off on figures and form. And just I like the fact that that one was a price. So I was going to mess around with the 9, 5, and 2, but I like your ideas for creativity, especially if you can get skinny as this sequence moves on. And it does move on with race number 7. We've got a 3 and up allowance going 6 furlongs on the dirt. And this is a race where I came up with Mount Travers, excuse me, as my top pick. I just thought it was interesting off the trip in the last race, which I thought was sort of a subtly bad trip in that it looked to me like he moved early into a slow pace, just worried about being stuck too far back. And I thought that maybe took some of the sting out of the finish. I thought this one could go better with a more even run this time around. And I think there'll be some real pace here with a couple of one-way speed types signed on. So I really liked Mount Travers, and I did not want to get beat by T Loves a Fight, dropping to the allowance ranks for a barn that's just going so well, and another who I just thought would pull a good trip, assuming there was going to be a duel between the 5 and the 6 on the front end. How did you see this 7th race?
Much like you did, Pete. I love when there's a true pace play, and I definitely see that here with the 4, 5, and the 6. I think all needing and wanting to make the lead, and I really don't see them really sticking around, or they of course could, but they're really going to push each other and potentially open the race up for someone to come from off of it. Everyone's favorite podcast host and in the money extraordinaire number 9, Pete's play call is actually the horse that I'm going to look to play here. It's one of those things here again. If Joel has a good day, I'm going to do well in the sequence again, because I think he is kind of the key to this horse. He has that patient waiting riding style to where even if he's on a horse, he could get them to settle and then come. And I think that would, this and the distance will really play to this horse's strengths.
I love that point.
Number 9 for me, Pete's play call. And then 2, again, looking for something to kind of get my ticket to, you know, in the money, if you will. Ha ha. We love that. We love those letters, right? I call them my kindling horses, something really to add something to get the fire started or going here. The number 1 and the number 2 both have good jockeys and they've shown the ability to close. So I'm going to include the 1 and the 2, Last Judgment and Big Engine, on my tickets as well.
All right. Some good ideas. And I think you've talked me into putting Pete's play call 3rd in my picks over for the expert picks at twinspires.com. I originally had put, and I'll say his name, I had avoided it thus far, Hidden Scroll, who is such a bugaboo horse for so many of us. But I was thinking he could be the best speed. And when he finally breaks through without me, I was just envisioning how frustrated I was going to get and thinking about putting him 3rd. But you make such a good point about the trip Pete's play call is going to get and how well Rosario might fit him for this spot that I'm going to go ahead and spin Hidden Scroll, which definitely opens up the possibility that he's just going to stuff me in a locker. But we'll see what happens as far as that goes. Let's move on to the featured race. The Grade 3 Noble Damsel goes as race number 8, a mile on the turf. I'm guessing this might be one of the places you have a strong opinion, so I'm going to throw it right to you, John. What'd you like?
I do hit the number 4 Blowout. I think she's just ready to to blow out. 2nd off the layoff, she's really a Belmont specialist. Likes the track and there's that trainer, Chad Brown. That
he wins a few races, so. I'm told. He does okay in these spots.
I've seen that he does. Every time I try to beat him, at least he wins. So for me, it's really the four. I'm going to lean heavily there. If I had to do any type of backups, it's kind of the Chad show. the one, Viadera, as well. She really ran really well last time. Showing up, I think the four is just gonna show them the way. But for if there's any hiccups or any problems with her getting the lead, potentially, I think it may set up for Viadera.
I get both of those. I am gonna get a little creative with Feel Glorious, who I just thought closed so well last time without the benefit of a setup. And I was wondering if this one at age four has just kind of come into her own. I'm a little bit intrigued there. And I'm also, I don't mind Sweet By and By in this spot. Now, you make a good point. Blowout maybe moves up, and that makes up the neck distance between these two. But I do think we'll get a really nice trip, get the toe into the race from Blowout, and could take stalk and pounce tactics to the next level. But I would not want to look past either of the two you mentioned for me in my other pick bets around here. But I get it. You're trying to get stuck into those two Chads, pressing Blowout and hoping you can get the money in race eight. I lied before when I said the Noble Damsel was the feature. It was not. It's the secondary feature, because the feature is race number nine, the grade two Vosburg, a winning year in race for the Breeders' Cup Sprint. And this is a race I was going back and forth and struggling with. And I eventually decided that I think, we'll see how they bet, but I think the value might lie with number five, Firenze Fire, who I feel like has excuses for the two recent races that were not so good, being the sloppy racetracks in both of those instances. And the fact that this one's just such a Belmont horse for course, I thought would hopefully be a little bit closer this time around than in the race two back, and that might be able to make a difference on a track that he just loves. I'm hoping the 7-2 becomes a reality on that one. Number six, Engage, super duper interesting going forward, but just coming off the very long layoff with presumably another engagement in the Breeders' Cup Sprint in mind. I was just thinking this one doesn't have to win despite a seeming figure advantage. I would certainly consider using as a backup, but very interested in Firenze Fire in this spot. And if I were to play with one more, True Timber as the potential speed to the speed after that very big run last time was another I might take a look at. I'm very curious to hear. I'm imagining this is another one where you're going to look to get very skinny. Who'd you land on?
Exactly what you did, Pete. I could say it again and in my voice, but everything you said, I concur with. Firenze Fire all in here for me. The only other one that just as a C horse, because I think he's really talented, is the number two, Funny Guy. The distance it's not his friend. He wants to go just a little bit longer. If this was a 7-furlong race, I'd be torn between the two. But it's horse racing, you know. Sometimes things happen, so I don't think I'm even gonna have him as a C. But I wanted to at least for the listeners and the viewers to mention his name.
All right, let's move on to race number 10, the final race at Belmont on Saturday. We've got three and up claimers, $30,000 level, mile and a 16th on the turf. I'm going to throw it right back to you. How are we going to get paid?
Here we're going to get paid by one of four horses, hopefully.
Okay.
Albie, number two, gets a little bit of class relief here and should do well, I think, in this spot for sure. Right next to her, going out on a little bit of a skinny branch, I put in as a B, Shooting the Breeze. Does his best running from coming off the pace. And I think Dylan will have him close enough to be able to maybe not only pick up some pieces, but could get there first. a lot of times in these closing races are always, you're always doing really well and you pick threes, pick fours, and you get to that last leg and you've got these claiming horses and you've got one that just looks so much better on paper, but you know, it's a claiming race. So you've got to be prepared a little bit, I think, for the unexpected. So also going to throw in Allied Invasion, the number 8. When I initially looked at this horse, I really liked the way that the trend lines was going, and he seems progressive, and I was like, but he's just too slow. And again, this is another one I think where it's going to fit Mr. Rosario just right if he can work out that trip. I've seen so many times when Joel's on a favorite, potentially I've got a handicapping protege of mine here at Texas, and he's always he pointed these things out to me, to where some of these jockeys they're tailoring fitted for some of these horses. And I think, again, this is where Joel Rosario will fit number 8 really well. The only other one, Pete, I think for me, it's either All In or All Out would be number 11. And I'll use my Texas accent, Barley One here. Drops in class, and I think he could be competitive at this level. Again, he's going to take him gate to wire, or he's going to miss the money line altogether.
Second time is a gelding for Barley One as well. That's where I landed in here. I thought this was one you could press up a little bit just with the speed to be involved from the outset. And looking at the figures, I was wondering if this is a runner who might just prefer Belmont to Saratoga a little bit. But I love the cases on the 2, 3, and the 8 that you make. And another one, yeah, you look at the job Rosario did on the last day, getting this one home despite the benefit of no particular setup with Allied Invasion. And this is an angle we were just talking about earlier in the show with Spencer, that sometimes in these races, these restricted non-winners of two, that the first time against winners that normally I want to call a negative, you can actually make an argument that it's a positive because the horses are so comparatively unexposed. So Allied Invasion will definitely be on my tickets as well. Good stuff, my friend. You going to be doing any writing for the blog this weekend?
I am, Pete. I hadn't planned on it, but my daughter's got a tournament during the time that these races, the late part of the Pick 5, will be going off. So I'm going to get to the track early and play the early part. So if nice. I'm going to do that, I'll definitely put my thoughts up on the blog.
That'd be great. No obligation, but we always love having you over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Reminder, folks should follow you also at HorsePlayer31. What sport will you be on the sideline for while checking in on these late Pick 5 tickets?
Basketball.
Nice.
And playing basketball. So
awesome.
Dad's got to be there to cheer on.
Oh, no doubt about it. You got to have your priorities. And the you can't have an ADW account, but you could put the bets in and follow along. There's no rule against that in Texas. John Pinder, no, thank you so much. Not. Thank you so much for your time today. Look forward to having you on again soon. It's pretty funny to be doing this with two pictures of me, but there I am holding the new In the Money Players Podcast whiskey. We've sold a whole bunch of bottles, but we still have some left. It's limited supply and a limited time only. We're going to be making the first shipment in the next 8 or 9 days, depending on when I get over to Kim's place and we take care of shipping out all of these bottles. This is for charity, folks, for our friends at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Make a donation to them. I think it's something like 125 or more, and you get a bottle of our American malt whiskey. This is a barrel pick from Albany Distilling. I picked it out. I love this stuff. I tasted a bunch of different barrels. This was the one I thought JK would like the best as well. So he's on the label too. This is one that I just can't recommend highly enough, and it's not going to be available for very long. I really love it. I'm actually going to suggest that they submit it for American malt whiskey competitions. I think it tastes so strong. A 6-year-old bottled in bond, single barrel whiskey. TRFinc.org/players is the place to go to make the donation to get your bottle. TRFinc.org/players. Get your In the Money Podcast whiskey today. Next up, I'm happy to have back on the show the resident Woodbine expert over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, talking about the man who you know, because he gets mentioned on pretty much every show we do, because he's also our business manager, and he's been doing a great job ferreting out some nice prices at Woodbine over the course of the last few months, and going to keep up the good work, hopefully, today. Drew Cotney, what's up, my man?
Hey, Pete. Thanks for having me again. Yeah, I have to say I'm wearing hats. I typically don't like to wear a hat, especially in the video conference world. But I have reached the home renovation stage of my quarantine. So I've got paint on elbows, and my hair is about as frosted white tipped as any silver fox could be. So you're going to have to bear with it today, but thanks for having me.
What is the hat? We can't really see it. I hope it's horse racing appropriate.
It is not. It is golf appropriate.
Okay, we'll take that. We'll take that. That's acceptable. What specifically?
A member guest that I won down at my parents' country club, West Virginia, small little country club. So has a special place in my heart for me because of that member guest.
If you had the ticket saying that the best humble brag of the show was going to go to Drew Cotney, you could go to the window and cash because there it is, folks. There it is. Let's talk about this racing from Woodbine on Saturday. We're going to do a little bit of bonus coverage because race number three is a graded stake. It's the Grade 3 Ontario Fashion Stakes going 6 furlongs on the synthetic. And I was going to try to get away with a pace play here, and that's number 5, Sister Peacock. This one has a pretty impressive body of work, all things considered. And really the last 4 races, according to Timeform US, pace figure coding anyway, has gone a little too fast, too soon. Wondering if at this stage of their partnership, Emma Jane Wilson can get her to ration out that speed just a little bit more and maybe lead them on a merry chase in this year's Ontario Fashion. Solid 9-2 on the morning line. But Drew, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I think this one starts with Painting, the morning line favorite. Cross entered in a listed stakes later in the day. It really comes down to, do they want to take on Super Escape again? I assume Josie Carroll is going to stay with this spot and keep Painting there. I think this horse has been overly flattered by pace setup, somewhat like you're saying with the aforementioned Sister Peacock, the number 5 is where I landed as well. I'm not going to reiterate anything you said because I agree with everything. I do want to point out one horse, the number 2 Victory Kingdom. I think this could be an interesting one to get back onto the right surface train for. A Tapita grass mixture comes in from Saratoga. It stood no shot having to make 2 moves in that race. That was a sprint at 5.5 on a sloppy track and just looked to want none of it. So that newcomer might be able to clunk up, but I'm not going to single my day around that one. My top choice is going to the number 5.
All right, let's move on to the late pick 4, which today is races 7-10. What are you going to cover in your column over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, Drew?
I'll have this that third race we just discussed in the last 4 of the day. So the late pick 4 we'll have up.
So basically, you'll just be able to get a deeper dive with some extra thoughts from the races we're talking about here. The first one is this 7th race. We've got 3 and up maidens with a lot of money in the pot going 6 furlongs on the turf. I'll let you kick this one off. What did you come up with here?
Yeah, I think the Oxley spent a lot of money on the number 1, Feeling Funny, almost $1 million purchase, and still is seeking the maiden breaker. This one reminds me a lot of when we were sitting at the DG Lounge way back, which feels like 5 years ago at this point, last summer watching Break Even take on Royal Charlotte, or it might be Royal Charlatan, so excuse me there, in the Prioress in 2019. The whole jockey angle was just let the horse's natural speed win the race. There's no real asking. There's no real maneuvering other than just sit chilly and hope the horse's natural speed wins. That's what the one felt like last out. And that just doesn't give me a lot of warm and fuzzies, knowing that maybe this is just one of those speed and fade types and we're trying to ration out that speed as much as possible. Because the morning workout tab suggests that full-heartedly, that this one is meant to go fast, and that's it. So where I ended up landing on is the number 6. Oh, sorry, I've got the wrong number here, Pete.
You want me to take over and give my thought on the race while you get organized, or can you pick right up?
Yeah, give your thought here. Let me just double check where I'm at here.
I was somewhat sharing your cynicism about Feeling Funny, who would be no surprise at all as a flow move up coming out of the last race. Looks the clear speed in here once again. So I'd have no objection to using Feeling Funny as a backup. But I decided to give Fabiola another chance. This is one who made the first Woodbine start last time on the synthetic. Was, I thought, maybe just a little bit too far out of it early in that race and didn't break well. I think Fabiola is worth another chance for connections, and Rafael Hernandez getting back onto the turf where the good form in California came from. So I was going to take another shot with Fabiola in the spot, second time over the Woodbine, second time at Woodbine, first time on the Woodbine turf. Where did you end up?
You're killing me. It's like you're stealing my notes. The number nine for me, Fabiola. I'm sorry for the mix.
Well, I tried to let you go first.
I know. I love it, though. So June 20th, though, I'll add one more detail. Sprint race closing with neutral fractions. Amazing run at it, just not to get up at the wire in time. Now, Moonhall Millie did come back and win, so flatters that form. Again, the last at Woodbine didn't break well. Was it just had a rough go of it. So huge upgrade in my book. If we get anything close to like 5-2, 2-1, that feels about where the value line stands for this one. And Hernandez is going to be able to navigate this one around, I think, without trouble this time around, staying wide and closing on well. So again, the number nine for me, Fabiola.
Well, let's move on to race number eight. This is that listed stake you mentioned before, the Bell Mahone Stakes, 1/16 on the synthetic with 100,000 in the pot. You pointed out about painting being cross-entered. You were theorizing that the other spot might ultimately be the one where painting goes. We shall see about that. But I don't think we're going to agree here, but I'll let you go first anyway.
Yeah, thank you. So I think there's tons of speed here with Super Escape and Summer Shady down on the inside. I typically like to think when you have two horses on the inside that are going to be clear speed, the rest of the jockey colony sees that in this race and aren't going to let those two just get away with the race here. I'm going to take a stand against the number four Super Escape because I just feel has been getting a little easier go of it and beating up on a little lighter of a class. I want to say the number six, Saratoga Vision, somehow. I like want to figure out how to make this a top pick because this horse continues to be a maiden, yet they put this one in tough spots. So I'm going to just put that as the best value for right now, and we're going to table that one because my top choice that has a lot of logic to it is the number five, Strike at Dawn. If we get anything of the 10-1, I'll be shocked. There's a strong recent workout. The trainer's 20% moving from turf to synth. And I think this one's going to get a great setup with stalking those speeds that are drawn to the inside. And the five post is going to should have a ground saving angle to it. And those previous companies that this one has kept is amazing. Like out west facing Dog Tag and some other graded stakes winners, you really can't knock this horse too bad on the performances that it has had when you compare the class level of what is today. Now, Kimura did take a spill yesterday, so we'll have to watch and see. Thankfully, all scans came back negative, and he just had some bruising from what I hear. So we'll have to see who gets the mount for the number five Strike at Dawn. But regardless, I still think this is a great one to back at that price. Value line for us sits around like 9-2. That feels about the right price. Anything lower is too short.
You'll get higher than that, I'm sure. And you make a compelling case for Strike at Dawn as a long shot. And your point about Saratoga Vision isn't crazy when you just look at how narrowly beaten she's been in graded stakes. I mean, I don't know about winning, but certainly to get up into the number. I did think the favorite was the right one because I don't think that Super Escape is one-way speed. This is a horse who can take the lead when it's there. She can also sit and finish, even when going a little bit quick early like last time. I just really like the trip she's going to get. I feel like she's found a really nice home in the sort of lower level graded listed synthetic stakes up at Woodbine. We saw her win rather easily in the Trillium two back and then the Seaway last time. I think she can make it three on the bounce this time around. Let me give a note about Kimura because I think you're assuming that he'll let discretion be the better part of valor and sit out the weekend. And maybe that's the case. But if he does ride, I'd watch very carefully early on. We know this from riders, and they have such a tough mentality that we often will see them come back a little early sometimes. And if he's not on his game early, I would consider holding that against some of his mounts later on in the card. Obviously, I don't want this to happen. I want him to come back and be fully formed. And if he's there, I'm hoping it's because he's 100%, and that's what I'll be rooting for and may very well be the case. But I've seen this before where jockeys come either have a spill on the same card sometimes and try to come back or come back a little early. Just something to pay attention to. Any other thoughts from you on race 8 before we move it along?
No, that's great. I'm definitely going to be watching that in the morning before I punch some tickets.
I like it. Let's talk about race number 9. We've got a 3-and-up allowance going 6 furlongs on the Woodbine turf. And the horse that I like in here is coming off a long layoff, but I think should be ready. That's number 3, All Quality. I think that the last race, I know she was absolutely nowhere in it, and it preceded a layoff. So I don't know how relevant the form line is, but it did leap out to me how good the form line is with 4 next out winners, an above average pace, and a solid finishing time as a field, just the kind of race that has this very live look that I give horses extra credit when they come out of. Looking at the recent workout tab, just looks ready for the return to the races, and I feel like should get a nice mid-pack trip in a race where I do believe there's plenty of speed and has closing sectionals in the good races that suggest she might take a lot of beating. I'd love to see her show up in Ernie Perry's Clocker Report. That hasn't quite been published yet. You can find that. Lots of great information over at Woodbine.com, as we've talked about. Ernie Perry puts up horses for the weekend every Friday. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the Doug McPherson Journal. I always love his info. His picks are great, but he'll also give you little tidbits of information in there worth paying attention to. If you follow Ernie and Doug and read Drew's stuff on InTheMoneyPodcast.com, you've got a leg up on the competition when it comes to betting Woodbine. What did you come up with in here, my friend?
Yeah, I was just going to comment that those two are great handicappers, and I try to avoid reading their input before writing mine. So, right, you get kind of 3 angles, because I think all 3 of us take our own unique approaches. So I really have tremendous respect for those. I landed on the number 6, Roman D'Oro. I just feel the last out there was a bit of a check. It's not huge. It's very subtle. Stock speeds was bothered kind of the entire way, having another interference horse come in and kind of ruin the path. And then 2 back had 0 holes to bust through, because this one is a stalker. I think the 3rd off the layoff is really important for this one, being the peak conditioning. And I just don't like the price. Like, it's the top horse. I just don't want to bet a horse that loves to find some trouble at 7-2. I think the horse that I find the best value for CJ Thoroughbreds, the number 7, Believe in Beauty, at 8-1. Cassie sends this one out. Had a little bit of a good trip last out, kind of getting a little loose. But I think 2nd off the layoff should have a little bit more stamina, because that horse hadn't raced in almost 10 months roughly. And the September 12th workout is what caught my eye. The bullet workout going 59, I think that could be a good indicator that things are ready to rock and roll for this one. And this 3-year-old may take a step forward at what could be a pretty good price of 8-1. But again, top choice is number 6, but I think the best value is number 7, Believe in Beauty.
She's very interesting to me. I wish I knew that she would definitely be in like a good closing position here, as opposed to being up in the vanguard. Because I think from a on or near the pace point of view, it might get tricky. But I do love your case about 2nd off the long layoff for one who just fits on the previous body of work in Ireland against this group. So I'll take an extra look at that one as well, and maybe end up including the 6 and the 7 along with my 3 in my late pick 4s and late doubles and everything we're getting involved in here at Woodbine. And all these picks I was just describing, they're going to pay off in race number 10. We've got a 3-and-up starter allowance, 7.5 on the inner turf. I'll put it to you, Drew. How are we going to get paid?
Yeah, I love the number 4, Under the Eye. It has the textbook Drew Cotney pick for these wide open events. The last 3 recent forms all have excuses. Listed Stakes Company last, rained off the turf 2 back, and then coming back July 5th, hadn't raced for 7 months, was a little light. And then you get the reassurance there is a foundation under there, looking back at the 2-year-old campaign, saying like, oh, okay, those excuses are actually legitimate, and there is more upside to be had here. At 15-1, I can see this horse easily getting the rail trip, stalking the speeds, pouncing late down the lane. So number 4 for me, Under the Eye. Love the 15-1 if we can get 12-1, I think, is where my value line will stand at for that. Number four, under the eye for me.
I like the case, and I'll say there was a trip last time, too, to even give a further excuse. Bumped at the start, sort of middle-moved into a pace, coded red on Timeform US. I can definitely see under the eye, and I don't even have to squint. I'll put forward number one, Anne of Cleves, as another price alternative in here, just based on breeding. This dam has been a real producer, awesome lass, and you see Verrazano on the top. This is a horse who I feel like could be under the radar in the marketplace, has numbers that aren't far off what it would take to win this, and again, just bred for the turf. So I'm very much with you, and let's try to get a price to click things, put things all together in these late picks at Woodbine on Saturday. Any other thoughts from you, Drew, on this or anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think these claiming condition or these conditions are so important to realize that this is for non-winners of two. And right, like the logical horses on paper with a lot of backclass, sometimes you just have to realize it's almost like it's just the step above a maiden. It's not, there's so much variability that can take place. And I've been burned too many times finding the logical favorite and tying my wagering to that, like the number five Vespoli that did have a bit of a trip three back, then comes into this kind of condition again and gets beat at a pretty short price of 2-1. So again, be willing to get creative in these optional claimers and 2X levels because a lot of these horses, especially at 3 years old, are stepping up, and the 4-year-olds are and five and older are trying to figure out their ways still and haven't done so. So that's what I'll add to this. Be creative. Don't be afraid to take a stand, especially in these optional claiming events that just produce such great competitive fields, don't they?
You see a lot of interesting stuff, and you see a lot of opportunities to get creative, and just a lot of times where you don't need to get stuck into the quote-unquote fastest horse on paper. One other point I'll make about these races generally, one time I don't mind nearly as much getting stuck into the lower end of the odd spectrum is when you have a really progressive horse. A lot of times I find the market underrates how difficult it is to go first time against winners. That's something that with the better horses can sometimes almost be an excuse in and of itself. Oh, it was first time against winners. The horse is going to take a little bit of getting used to at this level to succeed. In these races, it can be a positive first time against winners just because you have so many runners, you know, when you have that N2L condition in there that that might have, I don't want to say character flaw. That seems a little too strong, but who maybe don't justify being the prices that they're going to be given some of the issues they've shown. The young progressive types get a lot of extra credit for me in these races, whereas sometimes in non-restricted races, I'll give credit, more credit to the ones who have experience.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. And last thing I wanted to add is, did you have a head-to-head you wanted to match up again?
We've gotten out of the habit here. Yeah, we've gotten out of the habit of doing it. We could do our long shots in the last, but I'm going to be a lot shorter than you. We could go back to race number 9, and I could take All Quality, who I think will be among the favorites, and then you put up – I mean, I guess I'd be giving you too much to give you both Roman Doro and Believe in Beauty, but you know what? I'll go ahead and I'll give you the best of the theoretical odds because I really do like All Quality in this spot. I'll take my one against your two in this spot if you're game.
I like it. Let's do that.
So All Quality for me. You get the 6 Roman Doro and the 7 Believe in Beauty. And maybe you give me like it's a push if All Quality runs second as well or something to even out the odds a little bit. Does that work for you?
Yeah, I'm game with that.
Excellent. Well, good stuff, Drew. Thank you very much. We look forward to reading you over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, and we'll see you again very soon.
All right. Take care, Pete. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I will go ahead and thank our guests first and foremost, Spencer Luganbuhl, John Pinder, Drew Cotney. I also must thank producer Craig pushing all the right buttons. As always, DJ Unstable himself, Craig Gorbanoff, does such a great job on these shows. We could not do it without him, and I mean that literally. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. And I also will give a shout out to our various sponsors and partners, including Woodbine Racing, Racing Picks, of course, Stable Duel, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, 10 Strike Racing. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. You saw him before. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. You'll see him soon. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.